did you like to be an actress? Were you scared to be alone? We never stopped to wonder till a person's gone. We never yearned to know him. And someone is around us. We don't know what we're seeing. We take a Polaroid picture to find a human being. We never stop to
WBAI New York.
Oh, it's Christ, Marilyn Monroe, as being, it was scared to be alone. And funnily enough, Rex Reed then, in a review he did of that album, said if Marilyn Monroe could have written, she'd be Dorrie Previn or something along those lines. And she is, to many people, a symbol of a woman who was destroyed by being a woman, in a way, by exploitation, by the fears and the insecurities that she had as a result of the kind of woman she was. And I wondered why you chose her, and if it had to do with the empathy with that kind of character.
I couldn't tell you why I chose her. I think it was just an instinctive choice, so I couldn't really rationalize it. If Marilyn Monroe was a victim at all, I believe she was a victim of herself. I know the terrible outer responsibilities and forces, the invasion of privacy, all those things that go into the life and the existence of a person, a star such as Marilyn Monroe. Nevertheless, I think it is up to the individual to protect his or her own privacy, his or her own soul. Mm-hmm. And that's where the strength lies. She ran to outer things for strength. Mm-hmm. And I think instead of running, you have to stand still and stay with yourself.
Is that more difficult, do you think, for a woman, for particularly the woman artist? Is it more difficult for her to stand still and look inward, or is it easier?
I couldn't presume to say, because I'm not a man, so I can't speak from the male point of view. But from observation, I would say that women have more chance for introspection, to look to the inner self, because men go out into the world. They have to fight in the metaphoric jungle, right? And so consequently, what makes them a success, I think the man is trapped by the feeling that he must maintain personal status quo, because if he then changes at all, he will undermine the foundations upon which he built his success. Mm-hmm. Now, a woman is not so interested, I don't believe, in maintaining status quo. Change is part of her life. Everything from the menstrual cycle to birth mm-hmm. to death the entire aspect of woman is founded on change rather than achievement so much, you know. So consequently, if there is nowhere else to go, it seems to me that it is easier. It is always harder to look in, but it is more conducive. A woman's life is more conducive to looking inward.
There's a certain anger in some of your work against male myths. In some of the early stuff, Michael, who was the superman who really wasn't. And I remember when we talked at that time, you told me about the early heroes of the West, like Billy the Kid, who was a transvestite and wore satin underwear and so on. And throughout that, in a lot of your things, there's a kind of an anger at the Hemingway ethic, if you like the super male. Do you feel antagonistic towards that?
No, I think you misinterpret that. It's not anger. As a matter of fact, it's a real feeling of compassion, because I feel, now whenever I use the term victim, I do not mean to imply that I mean victim of society. Mm-hmm. Perhaps our cultures have set up these mores, but I'm talking about, instead of identification with group, I'm talking about personal identity now. And the male aspect, that's again the situation of what constitutes the accepted form, individually and collectively, of what masculinity is. And everything breeds its opposite. I mean, that is an absolute, correct? Now, if a man is so desperately trying to prove his masculinity, it is most likely, and this applies to a female also, it is most likely, I would think, because he is so frightened of any feminine or female aspect in his makeup. Now, what happens is when someone overdevelops one aspect, its opposite, by virtue of defense, keeps getting stronger and stronger, because there's a war, there is a conflict that's going on within the individual. The result is that it's a death struggle. It's a fight to the finish. And usually, the weaker aspect kills the stronger, because something which is strong, impenetrable, and inflexible cracks and crumbles. Something which is weaker gives and survives.
Mm. That aspect of American society is particularly strong. You know, the super masculine ethic, because of the pioneer days, maybe because of the West and the cowboy on the horse and so on. Working as a writer, a woman writer in America, does that make any difference? Are you aware that you're working very much in a masculine-based culture, particularly, even more so than, say, if you were working in Europe?
I don't know, because I've never worked in Europe, and I only know what goes on in Europe by what I see in films or read in books. I love. The fact that European men, as portrayed in films and in books, are not afraid to be foolish. Look at Mastroianni.
Yes.
They are not afraid to be weak. They are not afraid to cry. Mm-hmm. They are not afraid to hug each other, afraid that somebody's going to think they're homosexual. Mm-hmm. They are not afraid that perhaps there are homosexual aspects mm-hmm. to that. Because I think that heterosexual, and I couldn't say the dictionary term of the meaning of the term, but I would say it embraces both things. Mm-hmm. So consequently, the thing of the European men, when they greet each other on a very surface level, look, they hug and they kiss. Mm-hmm. Hey, look at an American man doing it. Why? I mean, they're just terrified. I watched the mayor of a certain town recently, a very local town, in fact, mm-hmm. asked by a therapist to look into the eyes of the man next to him. Mm-hmm. And this was a kind of encounter technique, mm-hmm. right? He turned and he looked at the man next to him. And the man next to him, I believe he was an actor, was looking at him. And the mayor started doing things like wetting the tip of his pinky and touching his eyebrow. He could not look this man in the eyes because he was so terrified that he would be committing the actions of a homosexual. Mm-hmm. Isn't that,
yes,
isn't that sad?
Terrifying.
And I thought, that's the man that's running, I won't say which city.
Yeah. But that is a theme that reoccurs in your work. Even when you deal with, for instance, in the early album, Veterans Big Parade. I mean, this was an American Legion parade, a masculine show of masculine solidarity and patriotism and so on.
No, because there were women included also. There is the line which says, "All the widows proudly smiled, except for one with an infant
yes.
child." You see, if there is to continue to be violence, I mean, I kind of go with the Lysistrata thing. Women are just as responsible for violence as men are. And if women absolutely refuse to foster war or any men, any individuals who are partaking in the act of war, war must perish, mm-hmm. Because it's like, you know, it's like if two fighters are in the ring. Perhaps this is a bad analogy, but for some reason it occurs to me. If two fighters are in the ring and one finally says, "I give up," and raises his hands, the other person is rendered impotent. What is he going to keep punching this person who is pliable and not responding, mm-hmm. or not glorifying him by fighting back, mm-hmm. you know? So giving in is not defeat to me. Giving in is sometimes giving up.
Mm-hmm.
And giving up, I don't mean in the sense of defeat. I mean giving up the necessity for that kind of encounter, you know. So I feel I will not say man is responsible for
yes.
war. Just because women constantly say, women never start wars, women never start, but women glorify the hero.
And of course Indira Gandhi just started a war. You know, they always say women led the countries, there'd be no war. But,
I was quite terrified by the pictures of the women in Ireland too,
yes.
the way they're dressing now and the
yes.
militant aspect.
Yes. The masculine symbol of the father is very important in your work, not just your own father, but I think you said that father is used as a symbol for a lot of male authority, including God. And you said, whatever we're fighting at any one time, or whatever you are fighting, is heaped under the collective name of father. And I wondered if you could expand on that a little bit, what you meant by that, and how masculine authority figures come under that heading for you.
When did I say, how long ago did I say that?
That's recently you said that to me.
Well, I change so often, which I like. Mm-hmm. I'm in constant transition. I would like to say that I have heaped the authoritative figure under the collective title of father.
Mm-hmm.
I refuse to accept that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It is just like as though what I was just talking about the male-female responsibility in war. I feel that if there is a collective authoritative male figure, I as a woman have fostered it,
mm-hmm.
have given it strength, by saying that it exists as such. I feel that see, I'm confused about that. It has very much to do with my play.
Mm-hmm.
And so consequently, it's a play that I'm writing now. And consequently, I mean, I'm so aware now of the of the terrifying responsibility that men must feel as a result of the fact that while there has been built up a male deity, there also then becomes the full blame and responsibility for everything on a male deity, you see. So consequently, I think I as a woman must cease to make that terrifying and benevolent figure male. And then it will not only allow me to bear the responsibility of it, part of the responsibility, but it will unload a great deal of the responsibility from the poor, exhausted male and the male figure.
Can you personally accept a female deity, the concept of a female deity? Does that, you know, the National Organization of Women say, trust in God, she will provide.
Again, I'm talking about my play. I see God as male and female.
Mm-hmm.
All things.
Yes, which really makes more, you know, if it makes any sense at all, it makes more sense.
Yeah, actually. Yeah. And then both the responsibility of the benevolence and the responsibility of the wrath,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and the destructiveness. I mean, the women are equated with death because they give birth.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we talk about the attraction of opposites, right? Something that can give you birth can also take your life away
mm-hmm.
from you. So it is a terrifying thing. So consequently, to equate woman with death and male with life, you know, like I have read that there is a male feeling that male could become gods. They would be immortal were it not for women.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Well, males are women, too, and
yeah.
women are men.
Yeah.
We have each aspect. We have secondary, I have secondary masculine sexual attributes, and I have psychic masculine attributes and non-attributes.
Mm-hmm.
So does a man. And whether we like it or not, we must coexist within ourselves as individual. See, I feel that that's where the real integration takes place, not one to another, but one to oneself. And when I learn to coexist with the opposites of my my being, I will be able to comfortably coexist with every other minority in the world. We're all minorities. I am a minority. I'm the only Dori Previn in the world. You are a minority. You are the only Sally Davis in the world. Therefore, you must integrate yourself.
Yes.
And I must integrate myself. And when I integrate myself, my minority, I will coexist in a universe of minorities. Because there is no black minority, no Greek minority, no white majority, no pink minority. Well, there is a universe, a world of individual minorities.
And this is the theme of your play, you said?
Yes.
That means, I presume, that you would have little to do with movements of any kind.
No, I will not ally myself with movements. I am not, as I said earlier, I'm not interested in identification with a group, with a movement. I am interested in personal identity,
mm-hmm.
not identification.
Mm. Anais Nin, when she was here, talked a lot about her work in terms of escaping from reality, mm-hmm. in terms of getting into the mystical and the magical and the fantasy life. And Europe seems almost the opposite, almost the exact opposite.
No, on the contrary, it's not. It's an amalgam of both. What happened in the past was I dwelt constantly in fantasy. I was so into fantasy that I found the world so intolerable that my psyche cracked.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into, periodically, I would be put into a hospital and be put away where I would just dwell in my fantasy land, being quelled by tranquilizers and stopped from screaming when I wanted to scream until I was quiescent and obedient enough to society's mores that I would be considered deemed to be allowed to be released, right? Okay, well, that's all well and good, but fantasy is not something wherein one should be locked up because one has a fantasy, a very strong, healthy fantasy life. However, I had no base. I would go into myself in this fantasy, then not know where to come back. Therefore, I would cling to another person, to an idea, not to an idea because the ideas were the fantasies, but to anything. I would grasp at any straw, pills, anything to hang on to. Now, I am in a kind of therapy now, which is called Gestalt therapy, which I do not recommend to anyone because I am not a missionary, neither am I a converter. I'm only saying that I needed something that could base me in the here and now so that I could go deeper and deeper into my fantasy life but have a place to come back to, a base. I have learned bodily awareness. I have learned, or I am learning, I'm still a novice, I am learning not to panic if I go too far out into space that I can't get back, because then I become aware of myself as a human entity in the human everyday world. That, I think, is a fine combination of Eastern and Western thought.
Yes.
I believe very strongly in, I guess the intelligentsia, call it Tao, I call it Tao, T-A-O, whatever you want to call it. I love it. I just love what that man says. Mm-hmm. However, he most people overlook the fact that he speaks very much of bodily involvement, awareness of now, of the reality of where we live. To go off into complete meditation, complete fantasy, you get lost, as you do when you go in any uncharted place, right? Fantasy and unreality, there are no maps. Also, I find that the more I become aware of the now and my body, the deeper I can go into the other and the non-body without danger of not finding my way back. Are being thought insane.
The other aspect of your interest in Eastern thought is your very interesting concept of eternity, because women writers very often deal with usually in terms of the reproductive process of having children and passing on one's soul or some entity, some part of oneself through one's children. But your concept of eternity is a little different.
You mean about
passes from one individual to another.
The energy, yeah. Well, the thing is that with everything canceling out in this way, life has become for me. It's a very strange odyssey. I gain by losing. I keep gaining by losing, and as everything keeps canceling out, and I still won't give up, I find myself gaining something. Now, when there was, or there seemed to me, in my mind, which is my reality, nothing to which to cling. I reached a point. Now, I use the word cling. See, that's a very bad word, and I want, and that's the way I was. Nothing to which to cling. I was hooked. I was an addict on anything that would keep me above water. The metaphoric water, not aware that I could keep myself above water. Now, what happened was, when these things all canceled out, it's an interesting thing, because that's Eastern also, you must cancel everything out, when you have passed every self-imposed test, I do not believe these are passed by some kind of God somewhere or something, but self-imposed test of not being content with your miserable lot and the way, the misery and the pain that I've been going through, I thought, well, okay, now what? I do not believe in the God I was taught to believe in. My father is dead, and had disowned me many years before he died. Anyway, my mother and I have very little communication other than verbal. I have no husband, no children. I've written a few songs. Maybe they'll last a few years. And I thought, then why am I here? What will I leave when I go? What reason? There must be a reason. And I came to the conclusion, when I came to this feeling that I was dying, if I do not understand a reason or find a reason for being, for having been on this earth, then I just don't want to go on living. Mm-hmm. I will give up and die. And I think that you can die without slashing your wrists. Yes. You know, so I thought and I thought and I dreamed and I fantasized and I wrote and I continued plodding on and all, always hoping to understand something. And I came to a conclusion that my body, the matter of my body, when I die, will decay and at best maybe be used to grow a flower somewhere, because it will just turn into, really kind of like manure, right? That's all. It's just a pile of decay. So what is the body? Okay, after you're dead, there's nothing left there. The genes that I would give to a child, the cells, that child will grow up the way it wants to anyway, in spite of me or because of me. So I really have no real directional influence, absolute influence over a child that I would leave, because I certainly did not turn out the way my mother and father demanded that I turn out. Mm-hmm. So there is nothing. I mean, that child is on its own, and that child will make it one way or another, and as it will. But the thing that can't be killed is energy. So if I have an allotment of matter, of bodily matter, I have an allotment of energy. And energy can't be killed. You can beat it, you can hit it, you can put, but it will always, it's like mercury, it will always go somewhere else. So I will leave an allotment of energy. Now, the allotment of energy that I was given when I came into the world, I think was at a certain level of development and awareness. I know, because of how I used my energy in the first part of my life and how negatively I used it. And I had an overload of negative energy, an energy which I then fostered into more negativity. And what I want to do now is to refine my being, refine my energy, understand myself, go to the deepest, deepest, darkest roots of myself to seek to know, to find my energy, to learn about it, to refine it, to make it better, so that when I die and that energy is released from my body, anybody can get it. And so I think that all I can leave behind is a better allotment of energy than what I came into the world with.
Yeah, it's a very interesting idea. Talking about your, you know, you mentioned there the negative way you used your energy as a young girl. You were channeled very much, from what I can gather, into feminine things, acting, modeling, dancing. I wondered if your parents had thought of you differently, or had thought that that wasn't necessarily what little girls should do, learn to dance and learn to be actresses and things. If your life might have turned out differently, or if maybe you'd have got into writing or reading. For instance, you said at one point that you didn't discover books until comparatively late in life, because that wasn't the kind of thing you did.
I was not allowed to read. If I brought books home that my father did not approve of, he would burn them. As a matter of fact, I was fascinated, and I do not mind saying this, because this is what I mean about how you do not transmit to your children. I sent my book home to my mother, and I asked her if she received it, and she said yes, but she'd torn certain pages out and burned them so that if the neighbors saw them, and I said, well, that's your possession, and you can do that if you like, but I said, remember, it's all me. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I have no way of knowing how I would have turned out, what I would have become. My mother and father, my father especially, they didn't do it because a little girl does that. My father was, in his opinion, a failure. Mm-hmm. And he wanted desperately for me to be a success. Mm-hmm. And with a great many people who have limited resources, he thought, I have no way of knowing what was in his mind, but I think that he thought, you know, we were poor and of very low means and all, limited means, and I think that he thought that the best place to make a success would be in the entertainment field, you know, as so many minorities do today. Mm-hmm. But he always thought he was very dumb. And he always told me I was dumb. Mm. He said, well, you know, you're just dumb. You're just stupid. You have no memory. You can't do it. So consequently, I think he thought, well, but if I performed like some kind of trained seal or something, I wouldn't need very much of a brain.
Mm. You also, at one point when we were talking a long time ago, said that as a married woman, you were limited too because you worked in collaboration with your husband. And everyone assumed, therefore, you said that people used to say to you, you write nice lyrics, or say to your husband, your wife writes nice little lyrics, and that little was crucial, which of course it was. I mean, was that the result of just being, of just the difficulties of working in collaboration anyway, which are kind of, I mean, it's always a kind of a fine line between who does what, or was it because you were the female half?
We get back now to the discussion of the male deity mm-hmm. and the authoritative figure. The husband's role in the situation, the husband, whatever he does is his business. Mm-hmm. However he conducts what he feels is his masculine role, he must and will do it as he wants to. The female or the feminine woman mm-hmm. conducts her life according to the way she wants to. I take full responsibility for the fact that I did not fully express myself when I was married because of my fear of what the male, the husband, represented. Yes. The fear of competition, the fear of surpassing, perhaps mm-hmm. even, the fear of the fear of equality. Now, that is not his problem. That was my problem. And I don't know, even now, whether at my point in my evolution, whether I would still be able to produce as much as I do, if I were, in fact, rather permanently, I would never marry again, but living with a man, I don't know if I would do, I don't know if I would allow him. Now, there's a difference between if he would. If he would put me in a position, make me feel in a position where, no, I cannot put that responsibility on him. I will have to say to you, I don't know if I would allow myself to put myself into the position of a supplicant, of an inferior, of someone who's afraid to compete with that authoritative figure. I don't think I would, because I'm more aware of the male-female responsibility now.
But you also said, too, in conjunction with living in a married state, that a woman frequently won't let herself be herself, won't let herself go out of consideration for the husband or the male figure.
That's crap. That's an excuse. Yes, I do. I really feel, I mean, it is possible that as a woman, in the current evolution of the male-female relationship, it is possible that if the woman, what did you say? Lets herself
out of consideration.
Out of consideration.
The fear that she might bring him crashing down.
Right. It might happen that she would do that to him, mm-hmm. but he would be doing it to himself.
Yes.
He would allow her to be the galvanic agent which brought his. In other words, he would get a natural out to fail mm-hmm. and blame it on her. And I believe that the same thing applies to the woman. And I can no longer accept. I will not say all my life. I said they did it. It did it. God did it. He did it. She did it. No, I did it.
Yes.
And I just allowed those people to work as agents to defeat me.
Mm-hmm.
For me to defeat myself. See how hard it is even
yes.
to put it in a more proper now term?
Yes.
Because we are so used to saying, and that's how it happened to me. What is it?
Mm.
It is me.
Yes.
And so it is possible that I could be living with a man, continue to grow, and he would not, and therefore he would crash. But that would be his responsibility and not mine.
There's another theme which appears in your work and also in a lot of women writers and particularly in the two that are joining you on this program, and that is the boundless love, the love without limits, which is always trying to fix itself into a limited situation into a, or fix itself on someone who is incapable of that boundless love, or put itself in a situation which has limits and consequently is setting itself up for frustration. Do you still feel that way as well, or is that coming back more into yourself? Are you still thinking, that's my fault as well?
Yeah, well, you see, you know, I've just been thinking, I've been aware of my voice as I've been talking, and I've been verbose about this because I'm passionate about it right now, and I have carried on at great length about it, and it's not all formulated, because it never will be till the day I die, because the thing is an ongoing thing. However, it is a discovery period for me, and I'm thrilled and delighted and in great pain. Mm-hmm. And I want to say to you that though I can very, very easily articulate these things or, you know, put them into some kind of form, that does not mean to say that I can do it yet.
Yes.
I want you to understand that. I mean, I backslide and I grip and I cling and I do all those things, but I'm aware. I am aware of what I'm doing, and I am aware of who's doing it.
Yes.
Now I'd like to get to what you said, which was the finding of a love object and the boundless love, attaching the boundless and unlimited.
Yes.
Okay, here's the way I feel. Here's the way I think I feel about that. To take, let's take a man, let's be specific, okay? I take a man and I invest in him boundless, limitless love.
Mm-hmm.
That's killing. Think of the responsibility on that poor man. How can he ever live up to that kind of desperate desire, clinging, need? You pin everything in the universe on him. You are my God, you are my father, you are my angel, you are my mother, you are myself, you are my provider, you are my protector, you are my God. The man would just die. I mean, no wonder they leave by droves. No wonder. I mean, one cannot do that. One cannot do that. And I speak now purely from a female point of view. I don't know how the man, you know, will respond to that. He, you know, he may say, "Well, I want all that. Okay, that's fine. Mm-hmm. I don't want to give that load to a man anymore. No." And I find, you know, I've been reading a lot of mythology lately. It's so strange because the farther ahead you go, the farther back you go, you know. And the more I keep moving forward, the deeper I go into the past. And the incredible discovery to me, which, you know, wise people have known for centuries, I guess, but I am this person who is just beginning to, I'm an infant, you know. I think in one of those things I talked about my infant ancient veins, you know. And I have discovered that every odyssey, every myth, every hero, and that applies to heroine, who goes through life, goes through all kinds of adventures, goes through Dante's Inferno, goes to the Faust, goes to the depths of degradation. Everybody talks about the second birth in literature. You die. You absolutely die. You are killed, dead, and, you know, left as a piece of meat that on which no more can be done or can you do to yourself. And at that moment, you are alone, and there is nowhere to turn but to yourself. And once you turn to yourself, you realize that's what you were looking for all that time. Christ, I mean, it is just, it is so simple and so complex as to be astonishing and terrifying in the most beautiful sense, terrifying.
Yeah.
We're earth, you know, like awful comes from awesome, you know. And the thing is, my God, I went and I went and I went and I traveled and I ran and I fell and I tried to kill myself and I did everything else, and it was next to me and inside me all the time. And instead of retreating now into myself. I have come to myself. Now, I will backslide. I'm this poor, weak, foolish, stupid, idiotic child. I'm a mature, compassionate woman, and I'm a crying, jealous, possessive baby in a fur pelt at the same time. And I know those components now, and I accept them. And to accept yourself with all the stuff. I wish I could use stronger language, because I love good, strong language. Okay, to accept all the shit, then you can see all the glory of yourself, too.
Yeah. Dory, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
We've looked a little into the art and sensitivities of three different writers. Anais Nin says she's reached maturity. She's fought her fights. She's conquered her Edmund Wilsons. But she remains interested in battles still to be fought, in what this generation of women can achieve. Joan Didion, while showing the rest of us in the most achingly pointed prose the horror of her sensibilities, manages to hold herself together, continues to produce great work, and is respected as one of the foremost prose writers in this country today. Dory Previn has had personally the hardest struggle of them all, the struggle against what the world calls insanity, the struggle for reality, for control of her own destiny, for her personal responsibility. The struggle against her childhood and her past, and more recently, the struggle against publicity and sensationalism. She's winning all of them, even though her battles are by no means over. And through her own pain, she's leaving us with a body of work which paradoxically enriches and strengthens our lives.
Mine was a Wednesday day, one afternoon at approximately 3:15. I was quietly laid to rest. Nobody guessed. A handy disposable heart marks time in a plastic breast, and so it goes, and nobody knows I am non-biodegradable.
Female Angst with Dory Previn, Anais Nin, and Joan Didion was brought to you on recording. You're tuned to WBAI New York City, non-commercial Pacifica Radio at 99.5 FM. Our next scheduled program can be heard in about 12 minutes. Until then, recorded music.
Yada yada, yada 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 yada. Yada yada. Stop talking, 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 wasting precious time. Just a lot of empty noise that isn't worth a dime. Words of wonder, words of weather, should we, shouldn't we be together? Yada, 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 yada. Let's stop talking, 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 taking up our lives, saying things that don't make sense, hoping help arrives. Curse my questions, damn your qualms, tomorrow they could be dropping bombs. We go yada yada, yada 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 yada. So we sit at a restaurant table, discussing reasons we're unable to commit. That's not it. All I want is to please and enjoy you. What makes you think I'd be out to destroy you if you commit? That's not it. Is it something you sense underneath my defenses that makes me a threat? That's not it. And yet, suppose that's it.
I don't want to think about that now. Let's stop talking, talking, talking. Every lame excuse. Justifying, alibying. Listen, what's the use? The sparrow chirps, the chipmunk chatters, and we go on as mad as a hatter, and nothing at all gets said. Talk to me, please, in bed, where it matters. Talk to me, please, in bed, where it matters. Yada, 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 yada. Yada, 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 yada. Jesus was a androgyne. Jesus was a he and she. Jesus was a freako baby, just like you and me. Jesus was a pagan. Jesus was a priest. Jesus was a beastie. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus was a beast. Don't you see that you are all the mother and you are all the son? You're the daughter, you're the father, you are all in one. sleep and dream. Lover, lover, let your body be my curtain, be my shade. I'm well acquainted with confusion. Lover, lover, I'm afraid to fall asleep. The night is dark and deep and I am so afraid to sleep, to fall asleep and dream. Something waits beneath the water, shapes and shadows drifting near. Someone watches in the darkness. Love, won't you make him disappear? Hold my tense and tired body. I am scared to close my eyes. How I wish the reassuring sun would rise. Lover, lover, be my cover, so those demons won't parade around me while I lie defenseless. Lover, lover, I'm afraid to fall asleep. The night is dark and deep and I am so afraid to sleep, to fall asleep. Bye.